All right, we discussed this morning the Sedra of Vayigash. And Vayigash has one of the most dramatic scenes in all of Tanakh, and Lahavdil really in all of literature. There's no more emotional confrontation than that exists between Yosef and his brothers at the very end. So after the byplay between them, which took over 2 years, with their first visit to Egypt, and their harassment at Yosef's hands, and the imprisonment of Shimon, and their return to the father, and all the intrigue and the mystery, and they come back, and they purchase grain again, and they're treated well, they leave, and Yosef's goblet is found in Binyamin's cup. Vayigash elav Yehuda. Yehuda approaches in order to ask for compassion on behalf of Binyamin, and really to substitute himself, telling Yosef essentially, take me and let him go back to his father. And after that plea, Yosef starts to cry. Vayomer Yosef el Achov. Yosef says to his brothers, Ani Yosef, Ha'ud Avichoy. I am Yosef. Is my father still alive? V'lo yachlu echov la'anoso so kinev halumi panov. His brothers were unable to answer him because they were just trembling. And he asked them to come near, and he showed them that he's really Yosef, and they are speechless. Chazal say in the Medrash Rabbah, in Parshat Tzadi Gimel, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah said, Oy lonu miyom hadin, oy lonu miyom atochecha. Woe to us from the day of judgment, woe to us from the day of rebuke. Uma Yosef at tzadik shu basar v'dam. Yosef is just a human being, flesh and blood. Kishahochiach esechov, when he rebuked his brothers, lo yochlu la'amod betochachto, they could not withstand it. They were trembling, speechless, silenced, paralyzed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shu dayon uval din, v'yoshev al kisei din, v'don kol echod v'echod, Allah haskame v'kama, how much more so when we stand before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is the judge and the plaintiff, and he sits on the throne of judgment. He's the prosecutor and the judge. How much more so, she'en kol basar v'dam yichalum la'amod lefanav? How much more so will we be unable to stand when the Yom HaDin and the Yom HaTochecha comes for all of us? So it is a great confrontation, and I want to understand, though, what was the experience that the brothers had? Because if Chazal mentioned that not only did the brothers have it, but we will have that shock to an even greater extent than they had it, so we should know at least what causes that experience. What brought them to that state whereby they could not even explain, apologize, rationalize, faint, do something. They just stood there, lo yachlu echov lanososo kinev halumi panov. What brought them to that state? To do that, we have to retrace our steps a little. Good we didn't have a shiur last week, because we could look at some of Miketz as well. I want to share with you some insights, really, in another direction, but it'll bring us back to this point that Rabbi Avigdor Halevi Nevensol of the Old City of Yerushalayim, longtime Rashi of Yeshivat HaKotel and its new incarnation, he says about these events. Now, one thing we have to recognize, I say this very often, is that the stories are so familiar to us that it's very difficult to take a new approach. But in fact, we have to try to understand the Torah in all its depth and profundity and complexity, always with a new mind, knowing what we know, but being able to put ourselves in the perspective of an observer, so we look with a little different perception upon these events. There's no doubt that if we would just look, hear the story for the first time, and just highlight different episodes, so many things that happened to the brothers seem illogical, and yet they seemingly paid no attention to it. They just moved on. So, for example, the first thing that he mentions, going back to Miketz, is that, as we know, they came down to Egypt, and they bought the grain, and they went back to their father's house. When they got back to Eretz Canaan, they opened up the grain, and they saw their money was restored to them. And they were taken aback as well. They said, Mazos also lekim lonu. What is God doing to us? They were afraid because, of course, they knew already Yosef was acting in a capricious way. So they were afraid that maybe they were being set up for another accusation, another indictment. Shimon is already there. Maybe now he'd be subject to further charges that they had stolen the money, etc. In fact, one of the reasons, I mentioned in shul last week, the Brisker Rav says, why did Yosef put the money back? Because he knows his brothers were righteous. They would not keep theft in their hands. They'd have to come back to Egypt to return the money. So Rav Neven Sol asked, as she quoted his son-in-law, I quoted his mechutin. He said, how is it possible that here they went down to Egypt for the specific purpose of buying grain? And grain during a famine was like gold. The whole world was coming to Egypt for grain. And not once when they were given their sacks, they didn't think to open it up to see what was in it, whether in fact it was grain and not old newspapers or those styrofoam chips that float all over our homes. This is what they came for. If you go to a store and you buy something, you'll take a sealed package without seeing what's in it. And here you're talking about a major purchase. And yet it seems that not only did they not check, but when they finally opened it, they were surprised, and even more so. So they didn't check the first time. They came back to Egypt with the money to return, and they paid Yosef again. And then again they left, and again they don't check their sacks. That's another time. And again they found the money. In addition to money, they found the goblet. So you'd think they would learn from the first lesson. They paid a price for not checking the first time, so now they're not going to check a second time. They already knew something was up. And yet, nothing seemed to provoke their curiosity, even to do a little investigation so as not to put themselves in the same position. How could that be? The broader question is, how could they not suspect over all this time that the person standing before them was not Yosef? So many strange things were happening to them that, again, we're familiar with, but in retrospect, it should have at least opened their eyes, caused them to question, what is the situation here? So, for example, Medrash tells us, at Yaakov Avinu's advice, they entered Egypt separately, not together. Vayomer levanav, lo motisru, Yaakov said, don't stand out. The Chazal say generally, that it's an admonition to Jews. We shouldn't do things in such a way that we stand out to the nations of the world. You know, like things we try to avoid, building massive homes, driving fancy cars, wearing a lot of jewelry in public, etc. We try not to do those things because we don't want to stand out. We don't want to attract attention for those things. Omar Yaakov Levanov, Atem Giborim, Atem Noim, you're very strong, powerful people. You're very handsome people. You're walking together. You look like you're part of a gang. A small militia. Al tikansu b'shar echad. Don't enter through one gate, the same gate. V'al ta'amdu b'makom echad. Don't stand in one place. Shelo teshlot b'chem ayin hara. Ayin hara, people shouldn't become negatively inclined towards you. Who are these people coming to Egypt, make everybody afraid? So come in separately. V'chein oyo. They entered through separate gates into Egypt. And yet, as careful as they were to enter as a group, they were right away identified and all brought before Yosef, who accused them all of being spies. All right? So wouldn't they wonder, firstly, how is it that they entered through separate gates, and yet when they come for grain separately, they're all rounded up and brought to Yosef? Furthermore, the Medrash says as well that when Yosef anticipated that his brothers would have to come for grain, so he directed the administer the administrator of the granary not to give grain to anyone unless shalikanes adam ad shal yichtav shmo b'shem aviv b'shem zkeino. They have to write down their name, their father's name, and their grandfather's name. And that's what happens. And Medrash says, also in Parshat Sadi Aleph, that eventually they came, and they came in separately, but on the register, it said in this gate, Ruvain ben Yaakov ben Yitzchak, Shimon ben Yaakov ben Yitzchak. So then right away they knew that, Yosef knew that they had come, and so he directed them to incarcerate all of them, to all brought together. First of all, isn't it unusual, wouldn't it attract some suspicion, why is it that they come for grain? The whole world is coming for grain, and they're asked to give their father's name? Oh, your name is one thing, your father's name, your grandfather's name. Why do they want to know that? All right. Yeah, it's curious, you'll return something to a store, they want to know your name and phone number, address. I mean, why? Oh, they do it for marketing purposes. But so Yosef did that already, like many things. And Vayigash, by the way, he implemented the first income tax system in history. But here, he implements the first real marketing system. But wouldn't it never existed before? You buy grain, you go to Pathmark, they don't care who you are. You pay money, you get what you ask for. But here, no, they want to know all the pedigree. Who's your father? Who's your grandfather? Why are they asking these things? And of all the hundreds of thousands of people coming to Egypt, only they are singled out? This family, because Ben Yaakov, only they are accused of being spies? Only them? Nobody else? And even more so, wouldn't they wonder why, even if they are arrested on these charges, they are brought right away to the Mishnah Lamelech, to the viceroy of Egypt? Isn't that also strange? If someone's arrested in this country, even for spying, they don't take him right away to the head of the FBI, they don't take him to the vice president, to the president. The system. You speak to the arresting officer, the investigators, your lawyer, whatever it is, but you're not taken right away to the prime minister of the country. And yet immediately they are taken as one to this individual, right away to the king or the king's aide. Why is that? Yes. Well, let's see. Hold on a second.
But at one point, they do kind of begin to realize that something's going on. Because when Yosef tells them to bring the
right.
Name, they say, why is
Hashem
doing
something? What they say, yes, but they don't say yet, Mazos Osel Kimlono. When they bring... Hold on a second. Right. Right, when they were arrested, and then and Yosef asked them to bring Binyamin, what do they say? Aval Hashem Manachnu Alachinu. What are they guilty of? Asher Saras Nafsho B'Schanu Eleinu. Right, and it was he cried out to us, he pleaded with us, we didn't listen to him.
They
didn't have Rachmanus, but notice they don't say we were wrong in selling him. No, they don't say. Yeah. Right. Yes, but they're not connecting the dots, though. Now, when they get back to their house, then they say, Mazos Osel Kimlono. Why is God doing this to us? Or what has God done to us? Right. But they stop. They don't do that Cheshbon HaNefesh. I mean, what's going on? They just say Mazos, and then they Vayavol Yaakov Vayhem Arza Kanan. They tell them what happened. Not directly. They're wondering, but they're not drawing conclusions. Even more so, before we get to this. So they're brought before Yosef, the Mishnah Lamelech, and oddity of oddities. Yosef knows who they are. Yosef is able to put them in age order. Yosef is able to say to them, I know all about you. The two of you, Shimon and Levi, went and massacred Shechem. I know you sold your brother into slavery. Very strange. Where's all this coming from? More than that, the most amazing thing, which should have attracted their attention, so Medrash says as well, they tell Yaakov, Bayamru, Sha'ol Sha'al Ha'ish, that the man was asking us all these questions, Lanu, Malatenu, about us, about our birthplace. So the Medrash says, Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, Afilu Atse Arisasenu Gila Lanu. He told us what our cribs were made of when we were young, what pictures we had hanging on our bedroom walls when we were children. How does he know all these things? That's Sha'ol Sha'al Lanu Ha'ish. He just kept asking questions and questions. What, literally, I'd say I was saying, what type of wood was our crib made of? That's that much he knew. And yet with all that, Yosef knows everything about them. Not only do they not suspect, but then they're wondering, why does he keep asking about our father? You think a man who knows so much, a mystical diviner of secrets, a person who knows so much that he knows what our cribs were made of, and conversations that we had amongst ourselves as children, you'd think he'd know, first of all, that the money that we paid was restored. If he knows about us, surely he knows that our father's alive and where we're from. Maybe he even knows where the brother is. Surely he would know as well, he has such good intelligence, what happened to his goblet. And yet they're not making any of these deductions at all. Nothing. It just is very strange. He's asking these questions. And even Yaakov says that. They said, Diber Elenu Ish Adonaretz Itaru Kashos. This guy spoke very harshly to us. Harshly. He was harsh. But they don't analyze, it seems, their methodology or their analytical gifts stop at a certain point. They wonder, it's strange, but they don't take the next step. Chazal say, I mentioned it before, when Moshe Rabbeinu is in the wilderness of Horev, and he looks up, and what does he see? He sees a sne, boer boesh. He sees a burning bush. Vasne inenu ukol. And the bush is not being consumed. The Medrash says that Moshe was not the only person to see the burning bush. Everybody saw it. It was on the side of Route 4. And people said, oh, burning bush, it's not being consumed. That's interesting. And they continued on to the bridge. But Moshe had diverted himself from his path. Vayomer Moshe, Asura no ve'eres hamare hagadol hazeh madolo yivrasne. Moshe was the one who was interested in finding out, how curious, why is it that this bush is burning and it's not being consumed? When Moshe says Asura no ve'eres, and he goes out of his way to find out, uncover the mysteries of this snare, the Medrash HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, this is my man, this is Moshe Rabbeinu, this is the one who will be a leader of the people. A person has natural curiosity. What happened to the Shiftei Kol? They just stop. They see strange things happening before them, and they don't make any deductions. Even more so, it was at the end of one of the Aliyahs, end of Chamishi last week. So Yosef incarcerates them, and he says, Vayomer Elohim Yosef, Vayomer Shlishi, after the third day, Zos Asu Vichyu, this is what I want you to do, this is what I want you to do, and you'll live. I fear God. I fear God? And then he says, I want you to bring your brother, the third brother, the youngest brother. I mean, again, why is he asking for that altogether? Of all the people coming down to Egypt, this is the family that Yosef chooses to persecute and say, I want to see your youngest brother. Did he ask this to any of the other merchants or the other shoppers who'd come now to the granary of civilization? And he speaks not only Lashon HaKodesh, he purposely didn't speak Hebrew to them, but he speaks from talk. Amirei Shemayim. Didn't that cause them to wonder, how is it that the Mishnah Lamelech in Egypt speaks like us? Shem Shemayim Shagur Befiv? That he speaks, Baruch Hashem, how are you today? Yosef the Egyptian, Baruch Hashem, Todah Lakel, I'm doing... They don't think? And then it doesn't attract even more attention when after the goblet is found, Yosef says to them, Mohama se'azah asher asisam, what did you do? Halo yidatem ki nacheshi nacheshi ish asher kamoni, don't you know what a superstitious person I am? It's a matter of chef. Either he's a Yerei Shamayim, Were we superstitious? What is he telling them? And still they make no deductions. Further bizarre event. Here Yosef accuses them of being spies. All right. What happens in the ancient world when you're accused of being spies? For that matter, what happens in the modern world when you're accused by a tyrant of being a spy? There's no trial. You're executed right away. Here Yosef accuses them of being spies, and indeed they engaged in spy-like behavior, entering through different gates, and he lets them all go, except for one. He lets them all go because he says, I know you have to bring grain back to your father and grain back to your younger brother, but I want you to go and bring me back your younger brother, and then I'll let Shimon go. And don't they wonder, don't they speculate, who is this person and why is he making these demands? And by the way, so when they entered Egypt, they came through customs. So as the Medrash said, I noted before, they had to give their names and the names of their fathers and grandfathers. And then Yosef waited for them to come to the granary to pick up the grain. It took them 3 days to come. Those 3 days gave Yosef sufficient grounds to say that they were spying. What in fact were they doing? So, 1 second. Yeah. When the 3 days passed, it's a medrash in Tzadi Aleph Vav, the low bow, and they hadn't come yet. Miyad Natal Yosef Shivim Giborim Beis HaMelech. Yosef took 70 warriors from the palace, V'shigir Bishvilam Levakesh Asam Bashuk. And they sent out these 70 men as private security force to find them. He figured they're in the Shuk. Halchu Matzu Asam Bashuk Shel Zonos. They found Yosef's brothers in the red light district of ancient Egypt. What are they doing there? Ela Omru. So now the Medrash says that when they came down to Egypt, they decided amongst themselves, Nachazir Esochinu Le'aviv. We're going to bring back our brother to our father. It's about time. So when Yaakov told them to go, so they agreed with Yaakov, they'll go in the different Sharim, and they'll ask about, have you seen this person? So 3 days went by, they found them in the Shuk Shel Zonos. Why? Omru. Achinu Yosef yifei tar v'yifei mara. Yosef is very handsome, very virile. Shema b'kubahu. He's probably that's where he hangs out. And that's where the brothers were found, in the Shuk Shel Zonos, brought before Yosef. So they had a low opinion of Yosef, that's for sure. But you see, in fact, that on their level they were making an attempt, so they had some curiosity. It wasn't as if they didn't think of Yosef at all, as poorly as they thought of him. They did think of him. So why did they ever speculate as to who this person was? Why did they even ask, who is this Mishneh LeMelech? Yosef is not the Mishneh LeMelech very long in real terms. What was the time difference? It was 9 years. 9 years. 9 years from the time Yosef was elevated from the dungeon to being the prime minister. A rags-to-riches story is probably the toast of the kingdom. So Yosef is a celebrity. And granted, Paro made efforts to conceal Yosef's identity, but surely the jailer knew. Yosef was in jail for 10 years. Other prisoners knew him, right? They knew who he was. So ostensibly, had they made even perfunctory inquiries, they could have discovered something about this person who has taken such an interest in their lives and who knows so much about them. And yet they never did. What else happened? So they take Shimon. They all come. They're all imprisoned. They're all released. And Shimon is still incarcerated. All right. How is Shimon treated in prison? So the Medrash continues. Vayisov Me'alehem, the brothers leave. Reb Chagai and Shimon's in jail. Reb Chagai b'shem Reb Yitzchak Amar le'enehem asaro, that he incarcerated them in sight of the brothers. They should see their brother being taken away. Kevan sheyatzu lohem, when they left, hoya machilo umashko machitzo v'socho. Shimon was feeded, wined and dined, given all the food, the drink. He was bathed, anointed, meaning effectively he didn't spend the next 2 years in prison. He spent the next 2 years in a hotel. All right? Doesn't Shimon suspect enough during these 2 years that when his brothers come down and he's taken out of prison and brought at the banquet with Yosef and everyone, think, since when is a spy treated in such a royal fashion? Nothing, no curiosity at all. And then again, at the end of Mikes, when they come down and they all share a meal together, and Yosef arranges them at the table in age order. All right? Now, the brothers were only a year apart, so it's not as if one looks significantly older or younger than the others. They're just a year apart. And Yosef sets them up one by one, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, etc., with Binyamin the youngest. And again, nothing crosses their mind. Even more so, they come down for this meal, and the Torah says, and the Gemara in Chulin elaborates that he gave specific instructions to his staff how to prepare the food. He says, "Tavoach tevach v'ochein." You have to shech the food in this way. You have to take gid hanosha in this way. And then when the brothers come, he says, let's eat together now. You should know. Everything is glat kosher. The meat was prepared under my hashgacha, and we took the gid hanosha, so you can eat no problem. All right? It's not even a frozen meal that's heated. It's all fresh, prepared, kedasu kedin. And again, nothing gives them pause to think that, what's going on? How is it that the prime minister of pagan, idolatrous Egypt knows the halachos of kashrus, and he's preparing food to our specifications? And they think nothing. They don't suspect anything. What's going on? What's going on? Shlomo Melech, what's
denial.
That? Denial. Shlomo Melech says in Mishlei, Mishlei Yotes, Yuvela Sodom Tsalef Darko, Val Hashem Yizaf Libo, that the foolishness of man's foolishness corrupts his ways, and then Al Hashem Yizaf Libo, his heart rages against God. Meaning people act in a foolish way, they cause harm to themselves, and what do they say? Mazo Soselo Kim Lanu. What's God doing to us? Not that I might have done anything to bring about my predicament, but it's all God, and I can't understand it. That actually is, like Mrs. Miller said, a denial. What's it a denial of? It's an interesting word, Ivelis. Ivelis is a fool, but the Gra said, Ivel spelled Aleph, Vav, Lamed, Tav, Ivelis. The Gaon Mevilna said that the word Ivelis is from the Lashon Ulai, maybe. Maybe. Doubts. Uncertainties. That the fool is the person for whom everything is in doubt. Or better said, things which should be certain, those are the things that they doubt. And things which they doubt, those are the things which they're certain about. Meaning what's a sofek, what's doubtful, to them is a vadai. And what should be a vadai, to them is a sofek. What happened with the brothers of Yosef? Everything, their logical skills were impeccable. You're talking about great Talmidei Chachamim, the Shiftei Kol. They only had one premise, and the premise was a wrong one. And the entire edifice they constructed on that premise, that therefore was incorrect. Everything was logical, flowed from just one incorrect assumption. And that was, they were absolutely correct in selling Yosef. Because Yosef was a Rasha, and Yosef was a Rodev, he was evil, he was endangering all of them, and therefore they were justified, so justified as we discussed once before, the Chazal say that nine of the brothers involved in the sale, and they were Mishtatev, Mitzarif HaKadosh Baruch Hu to them. so absolutely convinced they were right that it's as if they joined God in their deliberations and said, we are acting as agents of Hashgacha to remove this threat to Jewish life. They saw Yosef as a Rasha, saw him as a bum, frankly. That's why they went to look for him in the Kuvah Shalzona, in the Shalzonos. They went to look for him in the brothel. They could not countenance. And any event that happened, and all these events are very bizarre, each of them. And each of them, even one of them should have caused them to think twice, or at least give pause. But none of them did. So convinced they were of the rightness of their approach and the justice of their cause. They were blind in this area, blinded from reality, so therefore they could not think out of the box. And all they had to do was assimilate all this different information, the great knowledge Yosef had of them, the questions he was asked, he was asking, the interest he took in them, the father, the family, etc., because they were convinced beyond the shadow of a doubt, as the sun stands in the heavens by day, that the sale was justified. And therefore, everything that happened to them had to fit into that schemata, into that pattern. Everything that happened to them had to be adapted to the basic one truth of their life, that Mechiras Yosef was correct, justified, and an act of great righteousness. That was the one unchallenged verity that accompanied them through their 22 years of absence from Yosef. What they did was absolutely correct. So therefore, everything had to fit in to that one scheme. And to even entertain the notion that they were wrong in selling him, the thought never occurred to them. It was completely the opposite of everything they had based their lives upon. They did regret, Ofer pointed out, Aval Hashemim Anachon Alchinu Asher Ra'inu Ra'inu Tzaras Nafsho Bishanu Eilenu V'lo Shamanu. We didn't listen to his pleas. Not that we didn't sell him. Maybe we should have shown Rachmanis, not thrown him in a pit with snakes and scorpions, sent him directly, maybe given him a chance to defend himself. No. They never regret the sale. One of them, Ish El Achiv, two of the brothers regret not having Rachmanis, but they never say the sale was wrong. Reuben wasn't there. He wasn't part of it. That's correct. But you see, he didn't. That we discussed last time. We see he didn't do it. But they never thought it was wrong. And even Reuben, Chazal, was bound by their oath not to reveal to the father what happened. So even he acquiesced. But notice, none of them ever think maybe this was not the right thing to do. They never have any charot at all. Just on an emotional level, not responding to him. But on a practical level, they never think twice about it.
What about Judah?
What about him?
Well, didn't he change after his whole experience? Isn't that why he left, partly why he even left?
They never regret the sale, though. So I guess so much so that this possibility is completely oblivious to their thinking. Otherwise, they would have suspected something. It's completely removed. So the very last thing, no. If you take the last thing in the world and then go beyond it, this is it. That Yosef should be the Mishnah LeMelech. That's why, in fact, when they came to Yosef, what's the first thing they did? What does Torah say? They bowed down to him. And then the Torah says that Yosef remembered the dreams. Let's see, it's Perek Membez, Pasuk Vav. The Yosef who Ashalit al Aretz who Amashvil Cholam Aretz Vavache Yosef Veishtachu Apayim Aretzo. Right away here they were so resentful of Yosef's dream, his dreams, that the brothers would bow down. Here they see the Mishnah LeMelech. Right away they bow twice. They never think to themselves, you know, we're bowing down to this man. And then it says Yosef recognized them, spoke harshly, "Where you're from, etc." Veakay Yosef Ezachov Veheimlo Hikiru. They did not recognize him. Thought never occurs to them that Yosef could be standing before them. Chazal say, "Oy lanu miyom adin, oy lanu miyom atochecha." Woe to us from the day of judgment, woe to us from the day of rebuke. That's exactly the feeling that we will have on the day of judgment and the day of rebuke. There's certain verities that accompany our lives as well. certain truths, even certainties that we have, sometimes in a global realm, sometimes in a national realm, and we cling to these with such tenacity, with such fierceness, notwithstanding that they might not be accurate. It's easy to speak in a national sense more than in a personal sense, although we'll get to in a personal sense too. But in our history, we've had these experiences as well. You take the classic one from the time of the Nevi'im, which a number of Nevi'im explicitly stated that people felt it's impossible that God would destroy his Beis HaMikdash. He is a Beis HaMikdash. It's God's temple, the holiest place on earth. It's just not possible that it's going to happen. So all the Nevi'im who criticized and rebuked and ranted and raved against their evil ways, against their corruption, so they brushed them off. And even the nations of the world felt that. So Necho, Lo Haminu Malchei Eretz, Ko Yeshvei Tevel, Ki Yavo Tsar Voyev. The kings of the world didn't believe that Tsar Voyev can enter Chomos Yerushalayim, enter the Beis HaMikdash. How much more so did the Jews not believe such a thing was possible? When you become locked into one certainty, everything else falls into place. And you could have a very logical structure built on an illogical foundation that when the foundation is uprooted, the structure collapses like a house of cards. They didn't believe the Churban would take place. They didn't believe that God would ever exile his people from his land, despite the fact that Navi after Navi said this is what's going to happen, refused to accept it. You bring it down closer to our day. I mean, there was a time, even while the Holocaust was raging, that Jews refused to believe the Nazis wanted to exterminate the Jews. It can't be. And this willful blindness, in effect, facilitated the extermination of Jews, because we talked it into ourselves. We're going to be resettled, and we're going to an agrarian society. We can't live in the city. It's a benefit to go east. It's not a curse. It's not a death sentence. There really showers, etc. People talk into themselves a fantasy, or really a desire that they have. Their wishful thinking becomes mistaken for reality. And that is fatal. About 10 years ago, I had a conversation at the time with a person who was a major figure in the State Department. He's still a major figure today, very heavily involved in causing mischief to Israel, a real troublemaker. But I asked him at the time, the Oslo process was just starting, and the State Department was not really involved directly, they were more indirectly involved. It was driven by the Israelis and the Arabs. So I said to him first as a joke, what's going to happen if there's actually peace? You'd be out of a job. So he said to me, there's always Bosnia. In retrospect, it's funny, because the Bosnians resolved their problems more or less 5 years ago. But then I said to him, I'll tell you what my problem is, and tell me this is true. Because the premise of American diplomacy is that the Arabs want peace, and everything else flows from that. I said, what if the premise is wrong? What if they don't want peace, and therefore whatever they're trying to do in negotiations just to weaken Israel so they'll be able to destroy it more readily? And he said, you're correct. We don't entertain that premise. We don't entertain the premise that the Arabs don't want peace. So that's why you see, in really door after door, administration after administration, they maintain that premise. Because to entertain its converse is essentially to say that we failed and peace is not coming. But you find that certainty amongst the Jewish people today as well, except in who's part of our little circle. The illusion exists amongst Jews that peace is coming. Just around the horizon. It's just another negotiation, another retreat away. It's coming. And therefore, everything that happens is all part of that same basic premise. We shouldn't forget when, it's interesting how history is rewritten as you still live it, all right? So now everyone speaks about the war that started in Israel in September 2000, Rosh Hashanah, It's now a little over 3 years, and that war has now claimed 900 lives, all right? And it brought the scourge of suicide bombings, etc. And what happened the 7 years before that? So nobody was killed then. Only 500 were killed, and there were no suicide bombings before then. Because there were suicide bombings in 1996, that's why Paris lost Netanyahu won. It's not new. But somehow, the first 7 years of the process were erased, and things were blissful then. It's only the last 3 years that all the trouble started. Why? It's because illusions become very, very powerful. There's an illusion also that exists amongst Klal Yisrael today that harks back to the first one I mentioned, the time of the Churban. Israel can't be destroyed. All right? Rachman al-Itzlan, it's dangerous to live with such illusions. All right? You reach a certain point in a political sense whereby you've become so weakened and so demoralized that you you can't cease to exist. I mean, the movement that is gaining ground, small ground in Israel, but much more across the world, to create a binational state in the land of Israel, that's essentially the destruction of Israel. There won't be an Israel. So is there anyone who's just an analyst, a logical thinker, who can't project such a scenario coming to pass? Of course it can. Rahman al-Islam, but of course it can. And yet people say it can't happen. Rav Herzog said this. The third basement won't be destroyed. This, all these things are very nice midrashim. But these are exactly the midrashim and the fantasies and the illusions and the dreams that consume the Jewish people during the era of the first Beis HaMikdash and the second Beis HaMikdash. They said the same thing. It also can't happen. We have our own personal illusions as well in our religious lives that also be a great awakening. You know, whatever they are, everybody has their own cheshbonos, their own way of living. People more or less come to a conclusion that I'm on this level and I'm not progressing beyond it. V'kacha, this is it. God is satisfied with the way I live and no more than that. That's also a certainty that's not necessarily a winning argument on the Yom HaDin and the Yom HaTochecha. There are people, for example, who will swear by a certain Rebbe, a certain mystic. He knows the future. He has the insights. He's the one who can make all the decisions in my life and the life of everyone. He has all the answers. Those types of certainties are very dangerous, very dangerous. The Achay Yosef were also very certain the way they lived, the way they conducted their lives, and they were as righteous as we are. And yet, it doesn't happen like that. Shlomo Melech said in Mishlei, really a tough pasuk, Im tichtosh eso evil b'machtesh, if you take the fool and pound him in a mortar along with bits of grain, he'll learn nothing from it. He'll remain steadfast in his foolishness. What's the imagery? It's because he'll say, I'm not really being pounded. They happen to be pounding the grain, and I'm there too, so they're pounding me also. But the mortar's not really banging me. A person can become really trapped intellectually and trapped emotionally in such a way that they cannot maneuver. They cannot escape. And that is really the death knell of a person's spiritual growth. When they say, because I've moved here and I can't, there is nothing beyond this. Or my conclusions are so absolute that therefore I need not rethink them, reevaluate. If things happen to me that are unpleasant and uncomfortable, I need not perform a cheshbon anefesh because I'm living the proper way. So, mazos osalo kimlonu, period. Next pasuk, call the next aliyah. Not draw the conclusions from it. When a person lives like that, so that's the end. Can't move anymore. There's only one verity in our lives, and that's Amitas Hashem. The Amitas Hashem, God's existence, with a little humility on our part, so that's what enables us to live properly before Kadosh Baruch Hu. To always be contemplating, thinking, reevaluating, questioning those certainties that don't stem from Amitas Abore, but from our own desires, our own emotions. So, and when we live with that type of humility, and that constant need to ponder and to contemplate, then we stand with a greater comfort on the Yom HaDin. If Yosef's brothers were speechless, so Chazal say, Allah haskama v'kama, shem kol bos v'dam yechom laman lefonov. How are we going to stand on the Yom HaDin and Yom HaTochecha? That is something very, very, not only profound, but we should tremble. We should think. We should engage in constant tshuva. Chazal says, as the pasuk says, "Ashrei adam mefachei tamid." Doesn't mean to live in fear. It means to live with a sense that I have to live my life in such a way. Everything I do shouldn't act naturally. Shouldn't just act based on assumptions or preconclusions that might not be accurate. Rather, I have to always be thinking, always striving to perfect, to refine my avodas Hashem. That's exactly the lesson of Yosef's brothers. We'll never be as certain in anything that we know as they were in their sale of Yosef. That every angle covered in terms of the way it was done and their deliberations before and their own personal qualities, etc. Nobody could be as certain. If nobody could be as certain as they were, that's Oy Lonam Yom HaDin, Oy Lonam Yom HaTochecha. So woe to us, because we don't have that level of certainty. And the dying that we stand before is not a bus of Edom like Yosef HaTzadik. The Bali Musa would always quote this Medrash in order to petrify. The Bali Musa would always quote this Medrash in order to petrify their Talmidim, their adherents, because it is a very powerful limud. The scene is a dramatic one, and it's a dramatic one not because Yosef reveals himself. That's part of it. But it's because in the shattering of the illusions of Yosef's brothers, we see a little of our lives in that too. And we take Musa from them. You know, we have a tendency to identify with Yosef, the good guy wronged by others, as opposed to Acha Yosef, you know, the bad guys, or the negligent, the careless, the unfeeling people. No. Chazal is saying, yeah, identify with Yosef, good. Identify with the Acha Yosef as well. We identify with the brothers too, because it's in the lives of the brothers and their methodology and their processes, how they look at the world, that we'll see a greater mirror into ourselves than if we just look into Yosef's world. Yes? Very convinced.
The way that they did it caused such anguish to their father.
Right. Yes, that's exactly what it was. Wouldn't it have been more proper to consult Yaakov? So why couldn't they? Yes, that's true. That's true. So what's the answer? That's a good question. So why didn't they consult Yaakov? What's the answer? The Mishnah says, "Ein adam ra mum ba'atzmo." Nobody sees their own blemishes. So they did not see their own biases. All they saw was Yaakov's biases. They say, of course Yaakov's not going to agree, because v'Yisrael havas Yosef mikol achav, kiven zkunim ulo. He's biased towards Yosef. They couldn't bring Yaakov in. He can't see in that area. We can. We're objective. We know the threat that Yosef poses to the family, so therefore we can act upon it. Yaakov, you can't rely on it. Especially since they recognize, we've discussed in the past, that Yitzhak also had a son he had to drive away, a Rasha. All right, he wasn't happy about it, as we discussed here a few months ago. He wasn't happy about it. Rivka had to step in. Rivka had to intervene to let Yitzhak know what Esav's true nature was. So in a sense, they had to intervene and ultimately let Yaakov know what Yosef's true nature was. The miscalculation, they made a number of them, obviously, but one of them was that they thought that Yaakov would ultimately, being the Chacham, somehow reconcile himself to Yosef's death and see that in retrospect the family unit is more whole, that Yosef was a bad seed and had to be destroyed. They never anticipated that, as the Torah says in Vayeshev, that Yaakov would refuse to be comforted. They never for a moment thought that Yaakov would just be distraught and himself emotionally destroyed. Yikra Yaakov Simosov, Vayasim sak masnav. Okay, he tore his clothing. It's a veil. It's natural. Vayasabel b'no yamim rabim. He mourned the loss of his son many days. That's also natural. Your parent, God forbid, never gets over it. Vayakumu kol b'no v'chol b'nosov l'nachamo. But then all his sons, his daughters-in-law, his grandchildren all came to say, okay, all right. Vayma'ein l'hisnachem. He refused to be consoled. Vayomer kered al b'ni ovel shol. I'm going to my grave a mourner. He just kept crying. So Yaakov really was destroyed for all those years. In a sense, you understand Nancy's question, it vindicates why they didn't ask him, because he could not see Yosef's flaws and would never have accepted it. But conversely, that was their great miscalculation. They thought, if Yosef was so evil, so Yaakov eventually will accept it. So he never did. And by the way, the fact that he never did should have given them even more pause to start reconsidering, maybe it wasn't the right thing. They never made that deduction. Yes?
Yeah. I want to understand Yosef's actions. I mean, he's very concerned about his father. He asks him both, Nikis and Vayigash, how is my father?
Right.
But doesn't contact him.
Right.
The entire time.
That's a shear in itself. By strange coincidence, it was last year's shear. I'll give you the tape if you want.
So also, I mean, he must have realized how traumatizing it would be for him also.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. That was last year's year. Yeah. Shalomit. Okay. It's an hour's worth. Yes.
At the very end, just a question about Yaakov going down to his side.
Yes.
Now, on the one hand, obviously, the will of God, the name still has to end up in his side. On the other hand, just from a practical point of view, I mean, they didn't have to go to his line. He could have just kept sending food to them, and there is none. The famine is going to end in 5 years.
Right. Yes,
I mean,
that's right. Doesn't have to justify it. So that's our sedra. Look at Vayigash, Perek Mem Vav, Pasuk Bez. Vayomer Elokim Yisrael B'Moros Halaylo. Vayomer Yaakov Yaakov Yom Hineni. God says to Yisrael in a vision of the night, his national name is Yaakov. Anochi Akel Elokei Avicha Al Tira Merdom Etzraimo. You see, again, one of the subtexts of the story is that everybody knew, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, everybody knew that eventually they'd be enslaved, exiled and enslaved, Arba Me'el Shana. That's why God came to him and said, this is it, and you should know this is all part of the plan, all Ashgacha to bring the Jewish people into exile, from which we would be extracted and given the Torah, and then we'd return. So he says, Anochi Elkel Elkei Avicha Al Tira Merdom Mitzrayimo. Ki Lagoy Gadol Asim Chasha. Make you a great nation there. Anochi Eiredim Cha Mitzrayimo. Anochi Al Cha Gam Olo. I will go down with you, but I will take you up as well. Meaning Yaakov was prophesied that the Geula would come. So now at this point he knew that this was it. This was Va'avadon V'inu Osam Arba Me'el Shana. Well, I guess, look, Vayomi Yisrael, Pasuk Chaf Ches, Perek Memhei, Rav Od Yosef Benichai, indeed, it's great, Yosef, my son, is still alive, El Choverenu B'Terem Amos, I'll go and see him. Yosef can't leave. You see, next week's Edra, Vayichi, has to go to these great lengths to convince Par to let him go to the funeral. So all Yaakov said, I'll go down and see him before I die, period. The Torah doesn't say he's leaving forever. It's when he starts leaving that he has these doubts. Goes to Beersheba, and he builds him his Beach, and then he's afraid. So God says, it's interesting, because Al-Tirah, who said he was afraid? The Torah doesn't say Yaakov was afraid, just he brought Karbanos. No, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew exactly what Yaakov's thoughts were. It was trepidatious. This is it? The exile? Is this what we've been waiting for? Fearing all these centuries? So God says, yes, it is. Anochi reidim cho, mitzrayimo, anochi al cho gam olo. I'll come up with you. I'll ascend with you as well. Meaning that we will overcome this too. This is it. This was the prophecy to Avram. Now you're forming a nation. In fact, L'goy gadol asimcha sham. There in Egypt, you won't disappear even as a family, but you'll be reborn. I like to say rejuvenated as a nation. You'll come back as a whole people. That's the Egyptian experience. And that's what Yaakov, right at this point, is when he knows. And of course, his decision is ratified, because God says, you're going, but you're not coming back. Come back a different time, centuries later, different circumstance, Klal Yisrael, Torah, Eretz Yisrael, then the rest of our history begins. Okay? Thank you very much.
Thank you.